them and just make $1 million or whatever. And you just like, the fucking scale is just so off. Like, you just get so fucking twisted.
Yeah, but that 20K is 20K here, and that other one is not here yet. And if it helps, yeah, if it helps in the future, like if it's a good thing for downstream, then yes. If it's not a good thing for downstream, then no.
I mean, right? Yeah, probably. Like I say, I'm the fucking problem here. Like, the chemistry fit is that I am the problem, and that is
just what I do in reference. I do references all the time for people, but when people ask me for them, I give them names. I do not give them contact numbers, and I say, listen, I'm only going to ask this person to vouch for me twice a year, and you need, and I'm not sure if you're worth one of those two. So, like, if
that's so smart,
that's really fucking good.
It's totally true, right? Because like if somebody's going to take time out of their day and say, hey, you know, like, Rhino does a good job and blah, blah, blah. Like, that's a big ask for somebody to take time out to do that, right? And like, to be able to spend that time. So I'm not calling in that favor more than once or twice every year, like, no matter what. And so prove to me that this opportunity is worth that call, because otherwise I'm not going to waste their time.
That's it in a nutshell, right? There's some conversations where you're pitching somebody, and there's some conversations where somebody is pitching you, right? And
yeah,
it is difficult when the other party doesn't realize that they're pitching you. Sometimes you have those conversations, right? And they're difficult because you're just like,
oh, well, that's on you, because maybe that's also an age thing, because not let me rephrase. maybe that's also an
experience. That's on you. Yeah, I've already said I am the problem. We've established beyond all possible doubt that I am the problem in this situation.
Welcome to Game of Nodes, a weekly podcast from independent validator teams.
Hello and welcome to Game of Nodes, a weekly podcast from independent validator teams still trucking in this, what are we, second year of persistent bear market. We will keep broadcasting until price action continues. I was actually listening to a poddo earlier on essentially the continued degradation of living standards for the middle class in Western economies. Because obviously that's my kink. And there was an interesting aside there, right, where they were talking to asset traders, and and essentially the thesis is very, very obvious, right, which is that when interest rates fall, there are going to need to be, because of increasing inequality, people are looking for a place to put asset-based wealth, and so there are going to be a variety of asset classes that are going to benefit from that. So, I mean, kind of like, I think Null was saying this the other day. In fact, I feel like this I'm not saying that Null isn't clever, right? And isn't correct quite a bit of the time. But like, I think what the story I'm trying to tell in a nutshell here is, right, I was listening to a podcast with very, very clever people, and they said a thing that Null has already said several times on this podcast. And I was like, huh, I hadn't thought of that before, even though I've been told it several times to my face by Null. And I was like, I should tell Null that I have, on the light of literally just listening to some experts, reconsidered his thoughts on whether or not there will be some kind of a bull run after interest rates change.
Do you ever feel like you're just talking to a ball of jello?
I'm a slow learner. I mean, we've established this over time.
Now that I've talked to someone or listened to someone that may or may not actually know anything more than you, I actually care now.
It's been confirmed by someone I respect.
Is it the accent? I don't know what it is. It's something, right?
I'm just saying that, like, somebody who has a British accent and a doctorate in economics.
This guy's decidedly more British. I'd better believe him. Just
like, they said some very specific targeted data points about economies that I happen to know something about, not Australia. And so I was like, hey, okay, cool. This makes sense. I can.
This gentleman didn't prefix his conversation with IMO.
He has not.
Anyway, there's that.
Yeah, well, you know.
So, I mean, maybe we will be back, baby. Did anybody else see the insanity that happened in the Women's Tour de France the other day?
Isn't that over?
It's just finished. It was
the only sports I've heard of recently is breakdancing in Australia. Is
what's your face?
Oh, because of the Olympics?
Yeah.
Oh, Ray Gun, man. Oh.
She's so fly.
What's the story with that? This is the first time that's ever been in the Olympics, right? And also the last time, I think.
I believe that it is now being canceled from the Olympics because it's dumb.
Well, somebody told me that the host country gets to pick some sports or some items that only that they can push forward to be included. Is that what it is?
Yeah, that's how I made it in last time.
Yeah.
So breakdancing.
Like, I would probably rather watch keg throwing. Like,
yeah.
Well, did you watch the breakdancing at the Olympics?
Just the replays.
I watched the women's final and I went into it being like, this could be fucking cringe. And okay, there one thing was cringe, right? And I'm sorry, I'm fucking literally really old as well. So this is like super lame. I'm like a man and I'm super old and like uncool. But one of the two ladies that was facing off in the final was wearing like a little scarf thing. And I was like, that scarf is kind of lame. It's a bit cringe. Whatever. I have literally no right to say that. That was the only thing. But then they actually did the thing. And I was like, this is actually really genuinely gymnastically quite fucking impressive. There was like this piece of, they're like going to this piece of music. And there was like a really distinctive, like, you know, a lot of these things have that kind of 808. Like, well, it wasn't an 808. I mean, it might have been an old school drum machine of some kind, maybe. It's not important what drum machine it is. Don't get into that, no. Frey. Come on. The point was that there was a syncopated, you know, stab on the up, as is very, very common in almost any breakbeat, hip-hop, funk, soul, a lot of jazz, even tech metal, right? Very, very common to ride on the upbeat. And they were doing like a thing where they were specifically moving their feet in a pattern that always kept one of their feet on the down and one of their feet on the up. And I was like, given that they're improvising, that, I mean, that's attention to detail, man. Like, I got to respect that shit. Like, if you were a drummer, I mean, that would be a given actually, because you have to move your feet in a particular, because one is the hat, one of them is the kick, right? But ignore that I've just said something really stupid there. It was just like very, very...
This has gone way further than it needs to go.
It was just very, very, very gymnastic and very well coordinated. And I was like, fair enough, fucking respect. Like, it's just like watching a video of a really great drummer on YouTube and you're just like, damn, they're really killing this drum part. This is a different thing, you know?
I don't know. I went into it having pretty high expectations with the breakdancing because I think breakdancing is really cool. And I actually took a breakdancing class when I was in like fourth grade, I'll have you know.
In the fourth grade. And yet you went to the Olympics this time, ready to you're finally going to break good with that 20 years of practice. What happened?
That's right. I know. I'm ashamed. And yeah, I was let down. I've definitely seen like random YouTube videos of some kid on the street that's like 6 and a half pulling cooler moves than what I saw at the Olympics.
So are there parades for Rachel Gunn at home, or like what's going on down there?
There are no parades.
No, she didn't get a point.
No,
she got 18-0, 18-0, 18-0. She got actually pulled. That's knocked out.
I believe she got like maybe some sponsorships and stuff though, like
from coming out of it. Yeah.
Yeah. I think she's done pretty well out of it. That's well, just, clearly. Yeah, it's total hearsay. I don't know anything specifically. So
she has like a PhD in breakdancing, doesn't she?
Not breakdancing. I think it's something else. Bring cultural studies and culture, yeah. Which is like, okay, breakdancing.
Like, you know, you hear, I've heard just a bunch of stuff like her husband ran the fucking, you know, competition or whatever that she had to win to fucking get the Olympics. There's a random shit like that. I don't know if any of it's true, but that's just, you know, the words on the street that I hear, you know,
yeah.
Being an Aussie, not watching the news ever because I fucking hate it. So, you know, just random shorts on like YouTube or whatever that I might see, or someone talking near me. Oh, did you hear Reagan's fucking husband was running the competition that she won to get into the Olympics? Oh. I'm like, yeah, I don't give a fuck.
She's got some style and attitude.
I'm over here doing computer shit.
She's got some style and
attitude. So, yeah, fucking, you know. A bit of a bump in the prices, boys. just was doing something else over here and got distracted and noticed that there is a not insignificant rise in the prices overnight for me.
Well, we cashed out some stuff the other day, so that was
good timing.
Very due. Oh, you, obviously.
You picked the bottom?
Yeah,
you picked the bottom.
Yeah, why not?
So I do my part in a market downturn. I sell my bags at the bottom for everybody else to be able to profit off. So
it's very important that somebody take the hit for the team. That's like kind of my good general policy on that.
Yeah, it's your turn to take the hit.
Before
I took a hit last night. I experienced Schulte land last night, getting woken up no less than 8 fucking times last night by the pager duty. I love, one thing that seems to fuck me in being in this time zone is that people just love to fucking mess around with shit during the day over in the States, which is my fucking nighttime. Nothing ever happens when I'm awake. It's always when I'm asleep. They're like, oh, fuck, Null's going to sleep. Let's fuck with his test net now. Make it stop.
Dude, are you getting woken up because of test net?
Ah, man, it's like I gotta make a new tag and then not get alerted from the tag, but fuck it.
I barely even get alerts on testnet shit.
Please stop nerd necking, straighten that back and neck, sit. I can't, man.
Why have
you too far away from my microphone when I do that?
Why have you got any notifications on the testnet?
Because I'm a responsible fucking node operator.
You gotta have some notifications.
The only notification you have is the node is fully stopped. That's it.
Not 3 a.m.
Yeah, that's what was happening. It's just stall warnings.
Yeah, but stall, it has to be a chain halt.
TYDX? Is that what happened?
Yeah, it just kept fucking stopping last night.
Yep. Okay.
Yeah.
I'll give you a pass. Fucking
what were they doing? Yeah.
Look, man, for chains that we care about, I will care about their testnet as well. So.
Yeah, but you probably get alerts, the same alerts on all testnet nodes, right?
Yeah, I am going to put a tag.
I love the way it was like, no, it's because we're professionals. Like, but you like, have tagged the important ones and the unimportant ones.
No.
Wow.
Tag, give a shit.
Sympathy level decreasing rapidly.
Hashtag
look,
give
man,
a shit.
I have got a fucking list of shit to do, and that should be on the top of it.
He shows an empty piece of paper. I have a full list.
This is the back of the notepad. I can't show you the fucking front of the notepad.
The front of it says battery fucking, salad.
Dildo batteries, fucking salad spork.
No,
fashion salad spork out of yardstick.
No, as in those are classic mnemonic words, aren't they? Like alarm, salad, battery, whatever. Party. The joke was you turn around the fucking pad and your mnemonic's on it. There we are. Sorry. Fuck it. I'm tired. I tried my.
Oh, the mnemonic. Right.
There we go. You. Right. Okay. Happy days. Jesus. Anyway.
What is nerd necking? Is this nerd necking?
I don't know. It's a new term. I didn't know that.
Apparently you're nerd necking. Yeah. It's happening.
There's no real way to have my mic boom thing on this table the way it's set up. So I've got it on like a stand and
how do you have the edge? Do you have an edge of a table?
Table's got 4 edges. Yeah.
Yeah. So you can put a boom.
Yeah, but then it's constantly in my way. I've got a wall right next to it. Look, so it can't like
allow me
back
to show you. This is going to blow your mind. Right. 1 second.
Fuck, that seemed to have taken a lot of effort to move.
It did.
For those who are listening, the Frage has very slowly fucking moved his camera off the scene.
Boom mic. Well, so the only reason I had to move it slowly is because, as established, I'm in the loft, right? And if you move it quickly, all that happens is you take another chip out of the paintwork. They're all above my desk here from all of like stuff. You know when you put your laptop on the stand and you get back from the office and you just stuff the laptop on the stand, but you're not very careful and you just whack the wall. There's literally a dent in the wall here, which is my not being very fucking careful with my laptop stand. And there's like the corner of the MacBook is literally almost like, and it's kind of like discolored from the plaster, I guess. It's like, it's fucked anyway. And so I was trying to be a bit careful rather than just go like smack in one go and just take another fucking chunk out the ceiling. Like,
I mean, it's already missing chunks.
Most. I assumed it was dramatic effect.
Like, you already have to do some repair. Why not do a lot of repair?
Probably true. I do need to fix there's a little hole there as well, which I caused by just, you know, when you go like that and you're not paying attention, I just like punch the fucking ceiling, hurt my hand, and somehow managed to dislodge a bit of the thingy.
Your ceiling is within touching space?
He's in the attic.
He's in a fucking attic.
Wow. He's in the attic.
I mean, I know that. I just didn't realize that it was like, knowing how tall you are, I didn't realize you would have to enter it like hunching, like crawling forward.
Oh yeah, yeah. I just realized you've not seen my house, so this doesn't make. In fact, none of you have, so this doesn't make any sense. But yeah, the laptop here is literally so that I'm now touching the wall and touching the top of the laptop.
It's the mirror of what we see behind you.
Yeah, yeah. So it's like the wall comes down here just behind the laptop, and the desk comes like way out. So like the perspective is super weird because of the wide angle camera, but there's like, I don't know, 2 foot between the camera and me. So it's a way bigger space than it looks like, but the laptop is proper jammed right up in the corner.
So is it a cathedral ceiling where it just goes like, arcs like an A-frame all the way up, or does it level out at some point to a flat top?
It's just a peak roof. It's your classic European.
It is literally the rafters are lined to make a ceiling. Yeah. Hopefully it's got some fucking insulation.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. The beam is behind the plaster just here, I guess.
The rafters.
I thought the rafters are the cross beams, not the support beams.
Those bits are the rafters.
Are they? I always thought they were the crossy ones.
The joists. The ceiling joists.
Well, the joists are under the floor, aren't they?
Well, they're floor joists when there's floor under them.
Yeah, but they're visited. Yeah, okay. Yeah, yeah. All right. We're agreeing. Yeah, that's cool.
So
the building podcast.
So Funky says you can also turn up the game on your mic, and Funky, you don't want that. If I turn up the gain on my mic, you're just going to hear echoes. So
when Noel came
and
in,
plus it's not that kind of mic. You have to be like around it. Anyway, sorry, you're fucking wrong.
It's a proximity microphone, right? You're using the broadcast mic, right?
Yeah, broadcast. And you know, I've got the studios, so if if you turn up the gain too much, you're going to hear an echo from those, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, you could get, I guess the other way of doing it would be to like get a pop shield and a condenser, and then you could then bring down the background noise. We're overcomplicating things at this point. Sorry. What you should do is buy a boom.
I own one. It's on the table back there.
Well, then unpack it and set it up, my good man.
Do you want me to do that right now?
Yeah. While we're sitting here. What else? We got nothing else to talk about.
Let me get on that.
Well, there's a bunch of news. And obviously, you know, none of you seen the Tour de France. So, you know, it was really close. It was down to 4 seconds. Like Grand Tours don't come down to 4 seconds. That's crazy stuff.
Nobody cares.
It was very important.
Nobody cares.
It was lost by the favorite because their team betrayed them.
What do you mean?
Well, they had a minor crash and their team didn't go back for them to bring them back to the peloton. They lost a minute, and that's the difference between winning and losing.
So you mean like the support truck?
Like the other riders.
What would the other riders do? What does that mean?
Yeah.
Well, if your leader goes down, the other riders on your team stop whatever the fuck they're doing. If they're like in contention to win a stage or something, they stop what they're doing. They literally
do
stop
what?
Pedaling if they need to. They go back
to do
get
what?
The leader and fucking get riding.
Like they swap bikes or something? What do you mean?
Well, you basically do a multi-person up time trial to get them back to the peloton, because the peloton's moving at 60 kilometers an hour and an individual rider can do 40, 50.
Oh, you mean like to be like where they do that thing where they in a row and then they have the... Yeah. So, I mean, the back goes to the front, and like you just draft to get like to increase speed. Yeah, is that what you mean?
It's like 30 to 40% less effort to draft. So the peloton, which is you know the group of like 50 riders, 60 riders, whatever, they're doing like 60 kilometers an hour. And if you crash, and then you're trying to catch that back up, it's
you're
not physically possible, right?
Yeah.
So you're just going to lose a load of time. That's what happened. They didn't go back for their leader, even though they were the favorite for the prohibitive favorite for the race.
Is there but the winner is individual, right? Not a team.
Yeah. Individual.
Are there team points as well? Like, is it like F1 where you like team?
Oh yeah, whatever? Yeah. There's team standings for the overall season, and then each Grand Tour also has a quickest overall team, but it's not prestigious.
Okay, so that's like F1, right? Okay, so then.
But if you say so and so wins, you would always say, oh, so and so from X team wins, because it's not
sure.
It's not really possible to win as a solo effort because of the physics of the sport, which so is somebody, you know, Peloton's drafting.
So somebody crashed. The rest of the team said, fuck it, let's keep going, because they didn't feel like they're going to be able to catch up.
Well, no, that's just it. Nobody fucking knows. And the team, it's such a big fuck up. Like, it's an unprecedented level fuck up that the team has said nothing. They said nothing about it on the day, and they've said nothing about
it. Why is it a fuck up, though? How many people are on the team?
Like 6 or 7.
So if you lose 13%, who gives a shit? Like, then the other 6 go win, right? What does it matter?
No, because they can't win. That's not how it works.
Oh, do they all have to cross the line for a team to be able to score points?
One person wins, right? Your GC winner wins because they are the strongest overall rider. They have to be good in time.
Oh, because they're highest in the... I gotcha.
Yeah. So if you're the favorite for the entire race, you're already in the yellow jersey and you crash, your team goes, the person in the yellow jersey has crashed. You stop riding, you bring them back to the peloton, and then you continue your shenanigans, do whatever you want.
Yeah.
Instead, they just kept fucking riding.
So that actually happens where they stop and let them join back in for the Tour de France?
Then hopefully they can catch back up, right? Because the point is that the team is supporting this, whoever's in the lead.
Exactly.
Okay, I get you.
It's all just one team riding together for the person who has the best chance on the team, right? And if you're in the yellow jersey, right, you are literally the race leader. If the race leader goes down and you're just chilling in the peloton, riding probably less than your threshold power, just motoring along at 60 kilometers an hour, and somebody says over the radio, oh, hey, our leader's crashed. You don't just go like, yeah, I guess I'll just keep chilling here till the end of the race. Not even attack, not even do anything. I'm just going to chill until I cross the finish line. You would be like, I'm just going to pull over to the side of the road and wait for them to catch up, and then I'll give them some help catching back on. At the very least, like, it's absolutely unheard of. Absolute madness.
So the team that betrayed their leader got in second. Was it the person that crashed that got in second, or was it one of the team members?
Second. So it was the person that crashed. They came second by 4 seconds, despite losing like a minute 50 or 2 minutes or something on that stage.
So they absolutely hauled balls then, is what you're saying.
They absolutely demolished. No, so that day they were fucked. They crossed the line like behind everybody. It was a total shambles. You know, it was a complete shambles, but they just demolished the entire field in the mountains, but it just wasn't enough. So, you know.
Okay, so the overall they got second. Okay, now it's starting to make more sense, because it's the aggregate. You want them to speed back up because you still want to get them in first. Got it. Now it's all coming
the overall time for the entire mileage of the race, right? So every second counts, basically.
Okay. Yeah, so that's pretty egregious. That's insane.
Yeah. They literally just went like, hey, we got millions of euros in sponsorship or whatever. Should we maybe go and get the person in the most prestigious jersey and bring them back to the group? They're just like, nah, we're happy here. We're just going to chill.
They didn't
even win the stage either. That was the crazy thing. It was like, oh, are they going to try for the stage? Is there some like grand plan? Has it not been communicated? Are their radios down? And it just like kind of was like, whatever, man. It was just bizarre. Like, it was just one of the most bizarre things. It's like the equivalent of F1, somebody being like, I think I hear a rattle. I'm going to pull the car over and just like get out and check the tires or something. Like, it's that level of like, you're like, huh? That's not how tactics work in this sport. They haven't worked in that. So anyway, that's some news this week. That's the only thing I can think of that's really happened this week, other than continuing ICS shenanigans, right?
That story almost got me over the hump of giving a shit about cycling.
Yeah.
It was like halfway. Then I rolled back. Yeah.
You should have gone to the women's when you were in Paris. The Americans won it. It was a big upset. It was really funny.
It doesn't, you know? But that's like, I mean, that literally is like watching marathons. Like, you're standing in one spot and then people walk, they roll past you and like, who gives a shit?
Yeah, but the race winning attack happened on Montmartre, which they did 3 times. So you could have stood on it and seen them go past, and you would have seen the attack.
Amazing.
So, I mean, but yeah, it's like whatever, man. I appreciate it. It's a fucking lame sport.
To be honest, I didn't know there was that much strategy associated to like the team structure. Cause that's actually a little bit more interesting, where similar to F1, where it's a team, but it's also individuals. And so you have competition within the team, but also competition between teams and also competition individually. That does create some interesting situations that have blown up in ridiculous situations.
Yeah. I mean, there's a reason that so Netflix, you know, commissioned the Tour de France documentary that has been aired over about the last two series of the men's.
Right.
Because they were like, people who like F1 because of the extended tactics that play out over a season will probably enjoy a 3-week bike race where internal and external politics, nutrition, distance, team dynamics, personalities, all plays out in a really chaotic way. Like, and it's been a smash hit. So, you know, they were obviously right about that. And there's a lot of similarities between F1 and cycling, obviously, because it's all marginal gains, right? Like tiny, tiny increments. It's like 30 seconds on the mountain. That's the Tour de France, won or lost, right? On 30 seconds over 3,000 kilometers and whatever the total time would be, hundreds of hours probably.
The strategy for the Tour de France specifically used to be absolutely outrageous too. Like, it used to be that cyclists would IV carbs at night. Like, they'd literally have an IV of basically a sugar drip so they could load up for the next cycle. And there was, I think it was in the 50s, they used to take this type of steroid that it would thicken your blood. And so there were literally cyclists that would die if they didn't get up in like the middle of the night to warm up. Jesus. To get their blood moving again, because their blood becomes so viscous.
So that's actually a more recent thing. So that was the famous Italian climber Marco Pantani, who was around in the late 90s. His resting heart rate was something like 30. It was so, so low. And, you know, we now know that was probably from many, many years of EPO, right? Because that was like peak EPO times. And so he went to a doctor because he was like having these weird palpitations, and they were like, that is your heart stopping. So he literally had to set a stopwatch, wake up in the middle of the night, and then just do like just turning the pedals over on a bike to bring his heart rate up so that he could then sleep and be safe for a few more hours. He died young, obviously, Pantani.
That sounds like me at Breckenridge.
the Italians say that he died.
I gotta get up and run around a fucking circle for a little bit, try to get some oxygen in.
Right, yeah. But yeah, the Italians say he died of a broken heart, Marco Pantani,
probably after not. Being
disqualified from the sport. It was probably the cocaine, though. It was probably the cocaine. But he did.
Well, cocaine bounced out the heart rate, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, he had a heart attack. He had a heart attack on Valentine's Day, I think, in the end, after being barred from the sport during the big, you know, huge doping explosion when it all came out at the end of the 90s the first time. But yeah. They used to, because before like doping was a thing, they used to just do amphetamine all the time. And there's a famous case where a British rider in the 60s just died at the top of a mountain. He was just like so off his balls. He just stepped off his bike by the side of the road and just fucking died.
See, that's one thing that doesn't carry out to F1. It'd be awesome if you had like hugely heavily cocaine drivers running around F1 tracks.
Yeah, there's some like wild stories if you go back in, like,
get that shit
when it was pre, kind of like, there's like this really weird period where cycling was not professional in the kind of modern sense, but like it was possible to make a living as a cyclist from pure like the public would be like, ah, what amazing sporting prowess. We would like, and then people would be like, yeah, will you help us sell your butter or something like that. Like, so people did live off it, but it was just, yeah.
Len Davis says, I love cycling. Please move on because this is tedious.
Okay.
100%.
Fair enough. Are we going to talk about the Evmos ICS stuff?
Oh, can we? It's amazing. We still have 40 minutes until Neutron halts. So super exciting about that.
I'm like, who agreed to this fucking Evmos ICS shit?
Me. Are you kidding me?
I love that Chill didn't know with Vito on it. That just makes me so happy that he was like, nope.
What happened?
Who know with Vito did?
Chill validation. Oh, he was like, this is an attack on the chain because you're changing the state. no with Vito.
I saw the Commonwealth post from Chul being like, this is an attack on consensus, and as a validator, I didn't realize they'd fully gone through with it. That's awesome.
So has the Cosmos Hub approved it?
I don't think the vote's up yet. Let me check.
Because like the Ethereum governance proposals are as if it's going to happen.
Well, so, not necessarily. They're regenesising and changing the set size.
But when you read all the Commonwealths, it's all in preparation for ICS.
True. But
I mean, I don't know why I'm wasting my time fucking reading them, but that's what it says.
Yeah, I don't think the prop is up there, right? I don't think I've seen a Cosmos prop up yet. And so is it going ICS or what's the new one? The what do you call it? The where validators can opt into it?
Partial set security. That's still ICS, but that's ICS2 is what it's called. But it is partial set security. Yeah. It's not full ICS.
So what happens if of all the validators say no?
So the way I'm seeing it roll out right now is the teams that want to go to partial set security, they are kind of reaching out to validators and paying a stipend to be part of their partial set.
Sweet.
Which in my opinion is actually like a really great way to go about it. If they don't think they'll actually get like enough commissions for it, then just pay the validators a stipend. Great. Everyone's happy.
That's
so the team can
that set reduction is absolute savagery.
It is
from fucking what is it like 180 or something? Down to like 20? Isn't it
down
fucking
to 16,
easy,
I think.
It is down to 16. Yeah.
Those are probably the only 16 that were making any money at this point though, right?
No, I don't think anybody's making
any money.
Yeah.
Except for Block Demon, because they're still running the archive and they're getting like $20,000 a month for that.
Those fucking archive guys.
Fucking hell.
Fucking null.
$20,000 a month?
I need to introduce them
to Kingnode's fucking archives.
I feel like we're all running archives because you can't state sync this fucking piece of shit chain.
Yeah. Well, the state is 1 terabyte. So.
Yeah. What the hell? Big deal. That's nothing.
Yeah.
So right now, 117 in the set right now, going to what, 16? There's no way these, yeah.
So I was talking to a network yesterday about archives and we were talking about incrementals, like keeping incremental backups so that you can go back in time, for example.
What does that mean?
And well, like, you know, restore a backup from, I don't know, 6 months ago and get something out of it if you need, like, you know, just to be able to access and incrementally, like, so say if a partner who is using the data syncs with your backup from, I don't know, has a backup that they synced off you from like 6 months ago and they want to update it, right, without having to like download the full thing, they can just update from the incremental.
That's not how it works.
It is. Yeah, what? With ZFS, you can do stuff like that.
ZFS. No,
but anyway, that's not the point of this.
Okay.
So Tendermint touches so many fucking files that, like, if you did that, you would be burning, like, on a normal chain, like a like 10 gig a day or something, or 100 gig a day or something ridiculous like that. It just touches so many files.
Plus,
On say it's 1 terabyte a day of files that change.
Yeah, because files get created and then aggregated and destroyed, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So
it's kind of like a, yeah.
Yeah, because you get,
so much stuff changes that it's not like just creating new files. It's like changing everything in the filing structure. Yeah.
Speaking of that,
anyway, it's annoying.
What I've seen say also is like recently, I'm not sure if something changed with this last upgrade, but we've seen like the actual use space on the drives go fucking apeshit. But if you restart SAD, it clears all that shit out. So it's like holding on to some sort of, for some reason, the file system is calling those destroyed files as being held for something, or maybe the binary is holding onto those for some reason. So
weird.
Yeah, like we've seen like a couple things where we've seen like 3 or 4 terabytes of growth, but you restart SAD and it goes back down to, 600 gigs or something. Yeah, that's some weirdness. So you should watch that. It might be a SADB thing or something. It might not impact you.
Well, I mean, I restart it every day anyway, but the...
You restart the binary every day?
On the archive, yeah, because we do it daily.
For taking snapshots. Yeah.
So it's just part of the pipeline is that it stops the node.
Yeah.
Does a snapshot, starts a backup, replicates a snapshot, does a tarball.
How the fuck?
But yeah, anyway, the point is it touches fucking heaps of files.
How the fuck is Oni number 5 in this Evmo set? How did that happen?
From Yorping on the internet?
Is that boost drop TMTM?
No, I don't think so. I don't think that boost drop yielded much.
I voted no with veto on every one of these props.
For Evmos?
I think so. No, that's not true.
The question remains, why the fuck are you still even validating?
There's really no reason at all. There's really no reason. There's no reason at all to be able to be a part of this. I have no idea.
Hey, Jake enters the chat.
Apathy. I think it's what it is. It's apathy. It's still running, so why fuck with it? As soon as we go through an upgrade and or something else happens, and then it'll be it. But
Funky, you're going to be waiting a fucking long time for that t-shirt, bud.
I mean, that was what happened with Mars for us was like, I think I spent a year saying we need to just like turn that shit off. And Noel was saying you need to turn that shit off. And then it was finally an upgrade. It was just like,
no, it was an out of governance upgrade. And I was like, fucking yeet.
Yeet.
Oh no, that was it. No, we had a hard drive fail. That was it. We had the server fail. And then we had to migrate everything to avoid the slashing window so that we could then unbond without it being like, so that we could unbond gracefully rather than be downtime slashed. You should probably turn that shit off. Well, conclusion.
How many of you guys are doing the Kujira validating? Sir Schultz?
Mm-mm.
No?
I'm still there just because apathy. Like,
I will probably ride it into the dirt until that fucking price feeder starts to not work properly, and then I may yeet it. Because at this point, I just don't know if I could spend 2 hours fixing the price feeder once it fucks up, unless it's an easy fix. Because I reckon if I added up like the hours spent on that damn price feeder since Kujira started, it would owe me a lot of hours for zero return.
And I would guess 20 hours maybe, for sure.
At least.
And you're slashing, yeah. Right?
And each one of them in the middle of the night.
Fucking slashing. And you're slashing. Transmuter and...
So the Kujira, that's official, right? It's going to Thor?
Yeah, that's official. And what's interesting or fun about it is the Thor team, I guess, is going to sponsor like 3 validators to join the Thor set. And so they're having some sort of like competition right now around who's committed enough to be one of our validators. And it's like, if they sponsor you into the set, you make like, I think it's like $1,200 a year. So they're like, who is going to fight it out?
Who's
fighting it all? Yeah, exactly. To enter the set.
It's amazing.
What are the hardware requirements for Thor? Is it not too egregious, or is it like?
It's higher than normal Cosmos chains, and Thor also has weird stuff. I don't remember too much around its setup, but if I remember correctly, it's kind of like Polygon in that it has a Tendermint core, but there's also a different execution layer.
Right.
Oh, really?
My understanding was that it was Tendermint for consensus, and then.
Oh, really? Is that true? Yeah.
Something else. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Sweet. 626 million value locked. Wow.
Wow, indeed.
Well, we've inadvertently obviously also stumbled onto our actual news sheet provided by a news researcher. So with that last item.
Yeah. That was actually a smooth transition by me. Yep. So credit
was very slick. I posing the question from our news researcher would be that the way it has been bailed out is apparently $3 million USDC to buy 12 million 6-month bonded Arcuji tokens. The question being posed after that information is that pretty cheap for the products on Kujira?
Before or after this massive exploit issue?
Well, but if they can make some hay with that, I mean, yeah, I guess the problem is that, like, with especially with open sourced CosmWasm stuff, the fact that you've got, you know, projects that or products that are exist, yeah, it would cost you more than $3 million to have those sponsored, incubated, and developed. But if they come without their community or the community's toast at this point, then it's not worth anything, is it really? It's just open source software running for nobody's benefit, which is the question.
Anybody know how many fees have been generated by Kujira over the last, since Genesis? Is that known?
Ooh, that's a good question. Rama's got to know that one.
$3 million. $3 million seems like a buy. I mean, it's a good project and good team. And like, it seems like it's a totally, like, wish we were involved in it early on. But I don't know what it's actually, I mean, that doesn't mean anything if it hasn't generated anything.
I don't think there's any assumption that the team are coming with that other than the team have said it. But like, if you move off your own app chain onto somebody else's chain, unless you have like a formal agreement, if people have already been paid, they don't continue to work for free, if that makes sense. Like, I know that you can pay somebody up front and expect them to do work later, but
that's not true. Dude, we're all Juno validators. What the fuck are you talking about? It's totally untrue.
Like, that is a devastating riddance, usurper. You know,
I have a list of chains. I have a list of chains that meet that criteria. Are you kidding me? Are you fucking kidding me? Once we have been paid, we don't work. Are you kidding me?
So here's something fun for that. I actually had something like $100,000 in unrealized losses for Juno, and I just realized them last
Congrats.
Week.
Nice.
Thank you. I finally committed
You sold.
I finally sold. Yeah. Finally sold my Juno.
It's like taking a huge shit, right? Just like,
oh. I think if we were doing the, capital, what do they call it? The capital gains method for like assets. When we sold our Juno, we probably would have been in the million in realized losses, I think.
Flex.
Well, when it was $40, we fucking like, you know, held a lot of them all the way down to like fucking nothing. So
I guess like, yeah, hypothetically, our company holdings would have been worth £1.1 million, which is like $1.3 or $1.4 million, something like that.
Easy come, easy go.
And then you yeet them off for $4,000.
It's fucking less than that.
But the thing is, like, obviously they never were realized. We never had to pay tax on them at that value because otherwise we'd be bankrupt, right? Because you can't pay tax on £1.1 million worth of tokens that don't exist when you don't have any money because they are currently not there.
So the way we did tax is that luckily they went right up and came right back down like pretty quick. So when it hit 30th of June, we didn't have like this massive bag to pay tax on. It had already like depreciated a fair bit.
We got stung by that. Big time. Oops. Yeah, we had to pay the tax. Oh, okay. This is real tragic. I'm going to say it because this is like old school Cosmos lore, and this is really, really tragic. But we basically wiped out the entire profit of anything we ever made on Stargaze by the loss we took on the Juno assets becoming realized at the point where we crossed the tax year threshold. And we had to pay tax
including, on it. Including the Juno name service?
No, Juno validates profits.
Yeah.
But not the name service. Okay.
Well, we did pay that is part of, so the name service money partly went to pay this tax bill. Partly went on the fact we had to pay VAT on everything. Partly went on HAL development there and stuff. And yeah. But yeah, we wiped out the bigger, I guess, like the thing that I 100% know happened is that every cent we ever made on Stargaze, which wasn't like tons, but was like not nothing either, we fully wiped out paying our tax bill on Juno when it then obviously like completely died within maybe 2 months of us having to pay the tax bill on the hypothetical money. So yeah. Oh, fun times.
That's horrible. That's sad. That's
It's a lesson, isn't it? Like a usurper's business partner said to me about getting my phone stolen. You've learned a cheap lesson in the grander scheme of things.
Yeah, that's right. That's exactly what
I said. Which it didn't feel like a cheap. You know what? The thing this has in common with getting my phone nicked in Barcelona is that it didn't feel like a cheap lesson at the time. But in hindsight, if you walk away from it, it's a cheap lesson. It's just that you look at it and you go, oh my fucking God, that is a just insanity. Like, I mean, like Niall says, the idea that there was even if it was vesting, the idea that there was $1.1 million hypothetically sat somewhere that at some point you'd have access to, and between the time it existed, and like we've all worked for startups, right? So the idea that you have vesting things that then the company goes belly up or whatever, like
that's right. That's exactly right.
This is not an uncommon idea. We've been there in other scenarios and stuff, but it's the scale of the number. Like if you have vested shares from a startup or something and it goes tits up, you're like, oh damn, that would have been a nice holiday, right? If they'd ever cashed out and sold the company, I would have got like a couple thousand dollars and gone on holiday or something.
Yeah.
Like when the like hypothetical number is like over $1 million, you're like, this is silly. This is just, it's not real. This doesn't. And as it turns out, it's not real and it won't ever be real because it turns out it just evaporates.
The term for that is unrealized gains.
And well, yes, people, exactly. As I explained very patiently to the tax man when they came knock. No, that's what accountants do.
Well, I do think it might be something that people who have worked for public companies who have gotten options, or that might be work for private companies who might have, you know, options or equity or something else that might have experience with. But I think most, not to generalize, but I think most people who get involved in this ecosystem might not understand that term. And that term meaning like just because you have it doesn't mean it's worth anything. And validators, I think, get sometimes caught in that shit as well, right? Or anybody who's like huge token holders, or even project teams. Project teams are like the mass, like they're the fucking capital of unrealized gains, right? Like they hold the tokens they created out of thin air. And then they put things like this on the website that says like TVL is worth $600 million. Is it though? Is it? That's an unrealized gain that you could never realize that gain. So, I think that we've all been bitten by that, right? So
an unrealizable amount of your token's only worth the liquidity that's in the pools, right?
That I learned that from you. And Ben Davis says the moral story is realize your gains. I mean, that's a one way of Jake says it's not. Because
it depends. Wait, what does he say it's not to, though?
Probably to realize your gains. Realizing your gains means that you're basically exiting, or you're aggressively taking profits, as Rama says, which is right, or to be able to exit out. And like, I think depending on what you're, if you're in this to be able to just fuck around and have fun, then I think it's okay to not realize gains and just see what the fuck happens, right? Because you're fucking around and having fun. If you have real costs associated to it, and
then
Then you're fucking around and finding out. And in which case, I would say that you have to aggressively take profits is a weird way of saying it. Might be a way of just saying, just take what you can get. Because like right now, we're not aggressively taking profits at this level of token price on some of these types of things. But at some point, you just have to say, like what Schulze just did, which is like, you have to eventually say, well, fuck it. We're just going to sell what we can get, right?
So I would push back a little bit around, I think his aggressively taking profits and fuck the haters is the right take right now, right? The meta for validators for a long time was kind of influenced by Jacob and a couple other heavy hitters, where they were talking about how their income was coming more from their commissions than from delegators, right? And so a lot of people were following that path just because it was made really popular. Like if you're a true validator, you're going to just restake all your commissions and then all your income come from that. We talked about it on this multiple times, right?
We have,
And I think the meta is changing quite a bit here. Like, one, I think that there's less due diligence being done on what validators are being done. Like, Keynotes, God, he always gets shit on Twitter for it, for taking profits anytime it happens. Really? Which is always really funny to me. Yeah.
A business needs cash flow, man. I'm not going to apologize for that. Like,
yeah, but why people follow you specifically, I don't know. But like, if you look at the Dimension set right now, there is the number one validator is called Diamond Hands. But if you look at his transactions, he's pulling commissions like every 2 days, selling them. So like,
that's commitment.
It's so good. So the man is just different now than it was. And I think that Rahmer's take of aggressively take problems and fuck the haters.
That's amazing.
That should be the new meta.
That's amazing.
But to be honest, like, you got to appreciate only a crypto. You call your partner Diamond Hands, and you are the most paper hands in the eco. That is
absolutely. It's so good. Yeah.
Okay, it's water hands, man. It's not even amazing.
It's better than, like, somebody asked me years ago, like, is this all just performance art? And you go,
yeah.
Yeah. I'm not even going to. Do I even need to think about this? Yes, it is. That's going to go. That's all we're doing here.
So it's been interesting in the last like 3 months. Like prices haven't really gone anywhere, but revenue seems to have like stopped somehow. And fucking like costs seem to be ever increasing.
Yeah.
I also think I'm making dumb fucking decisions on infra, but
I know I keep buying more and more shit. That's a really other issue is too.
I just committed to a new rack for 3 years and I'm like, yeah, like, shit is not cheap in Australia.
Yeah.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah.
I think I crossed the 100 server mark this month. I have 100 bare metal servers rented right now.
That is up there. I don't have anywhere near the amount of validators you have, and I have probably 40.
Yeah, I mean, neither do we, and we've got 15.
How many?
Well, 15. I'm not counting any sort of VPSs or anything. Including VPSs, it's like way higher. Just straight bare metal, full on machine.
What is a VPS? Like a DO or something?
Yeah, like DigitalOcean, the cloud AWS. Things, Amazon, AWS. Yeah. So like, if you include those, I've got like probably over 200. Just straight bare metal, over 100. Jesus,
what is VPS?
I have a question.
For shit.
Do you aggregate logs from those 100 bare metal servers?
I do. And I actually have a server with 400 terabytes to process those logs. Yeah.
400 terabytes.
Reduced down 300 terabytes in RAID 10. So it's actually half of that. But yeah. So 150 terabytes effective of spinners. Yeah.
100 terabytes of spinners.
Yeah.
That seems like a bad idea.
Spinners.
it's fast enough.
All that to spinners?
It's fast enough. It's totally fast enough. Yeah, absolutely.
From aggregating logs from 100 servers.
Yeah, for sure.
Holy shit. But that, like, you know, that might be 100 bare metal servers, but that might be like 600 separate fucking daemons that it's like logging from, right?
Yeah.
You're shipping system D logs then, but are you using like Logtail or something or
Promtail? Yeah, and other things, but Promtail primarily. And then we purge logs every 3 days, or like it's rolling 3 days of logs.
Okay. And so how much of your 100 terabytes do you use on that 3-day cycle?
You know what? I couldn't tell you offhand.
Wait, so you only keep 3 days of logs across all that shit?
Yeah. Yep.
Why bother?
It's dependent on like its criticality, if you will. A lot of things like
name me one critical thing that you need logs for.
I like to keep track of the logs of SSH attempts. That I typically keep for a month.
But I thought you closed all those ports.
I did. So typically doesn't really have anything or doesn't.
No, there shouldn't really be anything in there, right?
Yeah. But okay. I don't know. Okay. It feels important to me from a security perspective to at least know what's going on.
So do you keep logs for like nodes?
Yeah. Do you keep password nodes?
No.
Yeah. I mean, I keep probably on the server. I keep like maybe a day.
I keep 2 gigs of logs.
Yeah.
It's fucking
cool. Whatever that is.
Yeah.
Well, we do ours in RAM and it just falls off.
Me too. two gigs rolling RAM. That's really what it is. Yeah.
Yeah. Because like if something goes wrong, if you're hunting through a log, you're not going back a week. You're going back like 10 minutes or an hour.
The only one I'm actually considering actually doing a lot more logging of is web requests. Because what we have seen is we're serving so much fucking RPC traffic.
Your hot proxies?
Yeah. I traditionally don't keep hot proxy, HA proxy type logs. And the reason that is because
They are numerous.
Not only that, this is an open ecosystem, and I kind of have a little bit of a privacy slash, not necessarily privacy, but like a moral stance against trying to figure out what the fuck is going on. However, we've had,
I think keeping stats is important.
Well, like, we keep a so fuck load of stats. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about like specifically like logs. But we do we've had a request like just recently actually with a team that we've seen that they had a blockchain problem where a specific contract was causing literally large delays in node processing, both on the RPC as well as within the Valve set. And they knew it was a problem. And so they were actually trying to identify what calls were coming in. So now I started logging both the request as well as the body of the request as well as the response. Right. So it's a huge fucking piece of data, like seeing exactly what's coming in, exactly what's coming out. And then because they were doing troubleshooting of that. So I started keeping a shitload of fucking logs associated to a shitload of requests on the EVM side, trying to identify what the hell's going on. And that actually, and then I was like, well, should I keep these all the time? Like, should I fucking hold on to this shit? And I was like, I don't want to fucking deal with this shit. Right. Because those logs are huge. I mean, you're talking like HA proxy, like web request logs with both the body and the response is massive. Like you have a huge amount of data that's coming out of that. And even with that, I almost talked about set, like I did do it and I was querying it. I didn't provide access to it. I queried to be able to provide the data that was requested, but I did not say, hey, I'm going to ship you 14 gigs of logs for you to go see who the fuck is requesting what and where. Because at some point there is, again, maybe it's that attitude, but like, it's a fucking permissionless system. Like if somebody's using our RPCs for nefarious shit, like it's not necessarily my responsibility to block that IP. You know what I mean?
Like, well, let's say just, so, sorry.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
I was going to say that Caddy is the big thing of the logs that I keep because Caddy basically emits most things through their logs. So like any sort of events that goes through the logs. So a lot of our logs go ahead.
But do you see the body or you see the request?
I see the request. I don't see like, the,
yeah.
Go ahead.
I was actually tracking the body. Like I was purposely looking for like an EVM request. It's not like an RPC request where like a traditional Cosmos where you just get the URL. Like, hey, somebody's tracking delegators, blah, blah, blah. An EVM is just posting to the EVM thing. So you actually have to look at the body of that request to say, what contract are they calling? What's the body of that? And like, that would be encoded and you can decode it in real time, like all that shit. Right. Which to me, like, I don't know. I just want to get involved in that business. You know what I mean?
Did you say you were logging that or they wanted you to log that?
Both. I wasn't logging it before. They requested because they were looking for specific people who were calling. They were looking for specific IPs that were calling specific contract with specific that we're calling specific and that contract wasn't bad. There's nothing wrong with the contract. Actually, it was just that contract was creating a situation that would actually was an issue with the daemon itself. And so that was actually stalling some things that were happening internally. And so to be able to pull that data out required me to pull the body data out because I had to actually look at, see what was in the body of each JSON RPC request to be able to see which ones were calling those specific contracts. And then to be able to understand, Could we rate limit that issue? Because that issue was actually creating a situation where it was stalling the nodes out, the Val set specifically. So
did you have to, were you doing that with hard proxy or did you have to use some sort of middleware?
No,
you can do that with hard proxy.
You can query, you can log it out. It's like a fucking gig a minute. it's like crazy amounts of text, right?
The only thing I've added to my logs is APIs. Is the only thing that I added to my logs other than the standard.
What do you mean APIs?
API keys.
Oh, yeah, that's a good idea.
Yeah, so it just prints the API key for the on that line for the request.
Yeah, that's smart.
It's only so I can get statistics on who's abusing the fucking free API keys.
Yeah.
That's basically why I started as well. Seeing the API keys and like what we're whitelisting and seeing what actual usage looks like.
I can do that through Cloudflare. I mean, I can pull that through the logs through like at the CF level, but
can you do that at Cloudflare? I thought you'd have to have a worker for that because you can't inspect the headers. You can't get stats on the headers.
Correct.
For the API key
at the worker. Yep.
Oh, you got a worker for that?
I did. I figured that out.
I'd love to see that.
I'm sure you would.
Fucking asshole.
Fucking asshole.
Yeah. We're being we've been collaborating on
we have we've some, been we've been bros lately.
Yeah, the these fucking this EVM, we've been Zabbix arising the EVM monitoring, which has been interesting. And so that we came up with this fork detection thing, which would basically like take the latest block on our nodes and then extract the block hash and then test a public node for the same block height and test its block hash to detect a divergence, a fork.
Right.
And wow, we keep getting these false positives. No idea why.
I did make some changes to that. Like, it's interesting where I thought maybe it was related to how we were pulling data or if the
block height.
It's definitely querying the right block height. I even removed some steps in between how we are grading that data. So I need to ask somebody, but is it possible, this is an EVM side, but is it possible that I could query multiple nodes at the same height and receive a different hash? It doesn't seem it should be.
It seems possible, but it doesn't seem like it should.
Could it be an MEV thing? But the block is committed, right? So,
well, I mean, they're committed.
The hash should always be the same, otherwise that's an equivocation.
Yeah, which is weird because it's happening every...
Wait. There's a situation, I think. Okay, I'm not familiar enough with exactly the order of operations in Ethereum to know if this is possible.
Okay.
But I guess there is a hypothetical situation in which a mempool, which is obviously is ordered in a certain way, if you could query a mempool before block commitment, uh-huh, and that block was not the leader, I guess there's potential. There's obviously a window of time between the finalization of the order of a block and the commitment of a block, whereby if you said to a mempool maybe at this height, which is the prospective current height, what have you got versus this other one, they would report different things. But you'd have to ask the mempool, not the node, because the node, no matter which consensus scheme you're using, a leader has to have said this is the block we're committing and people have to agree to it, right?
Yeah, but these are all committed blocks, I think, every time that we do this, right? Because we're looking at the past, and it only happens like once every, literally every, what? I'm getting it a bunch. I run more chains than you do, but I'm getting it like once on like Astar we run in, and it happened on Polygon. It happened a couple other ones where like
Barra. It happened enough for me to turn the alert off.
Did it happen on Barra for you? Oh, it didn't happen on Barra for me. All right, so something's fucked. That's weird because I just changed that job too to actually make sure that the whatever block number is coming out of the node, I'm verifying that it's actually querying that in a public RPC, that it has that it's querying the same block height. But I have received like once every one day for a chain, I have received something different. So what I thought about kicking this down the fucking path, which was just be, hey, it's got to be wrong four times in a row. that's my solution to it. All right, if it's wrong once, totally cool, it's fine. But if it's wrong three times, then there's an issue. Maybe that's the right, maybe because it must be querying the wrong block height somehow. But I don't even know how that would be possible.
No, it can't be.
It can't. It can't be. Or maybe I don't even know what the fuck it would possibly be. It's fucked up.
I mean, they're all GETH nodes, right? Maybe it's a bug with GETH.
Maybe not, because I've had it in Polygon, which is not Geth, that's Boar. I've had it on Astar, which is, I don't know what the fuck that is. I've had it on a shitload of chains, but like, I can go back and look at the problems, but it has to be at least six or seven different chains, but it's only one block. And that hash doesn't match any, it's not like it's off by a set or something else. Like, it's totally different. Like, it's fucked. So anyway, so Null and I have been working together. We've been bros working towards this dashboard's looking good though. Like, I'm really happy with the monitoring. So we did it for both Solana, because we do some stuff with Solana together with Schultzy and all VBN chains. And it's looking pretty fucking tits, I got to admit.
Looks nice. I think there's a few lessons learned there that we're going to move up to the Cosmos monitoring as well.
Yeah, I think so. Not this hash thing, but.
No. Actually, I said this to you in the chat the other day, but I'm going to get out my fucking low-level discovery hat and I'm going to make that syncing thing happen where when it's in sync mode, it's going to sync all the various heights for, like, you know, what's, you know, safe and, like, all the stages of the sync in, like, GETH, and have, like, a low-level discovered dashboard for that as well, just so it comes up when you're doing the sync and then disappears a day later. So that'll be a fun little experiment. I sort of half built it before and then deleted it because it was frustrating and it was late.
Okay, cool.
I always forget how that low level discovery works. I have to like reread the docs every fucking time I do it. So annoying. It's not intuitive at all, but it's pretty cool when you get it working.
Neutron is going to halt in a minute and 49 seconds. So that's super exciting for all of us. It's a halt height upgrade, which means that it will totally fail.
It's going to blow straight through that upgrade height, isn't it?
It is 100% going to. I guarantee it moves past.
I would say place bets now, but I think we all think it's going to blow through the upgrade height, don't we?
The target block ends in 950. I guarantee there's a 951, 952, 953. There's no way.
So one thing that other networks have done, which I like, is that if they have to have this fucking halt height, they distribute a new binary in advance with a halt height built into it. Well, it's basically, you know, the governance thing. So then you can stage it's governance without, it's like it puts an upgrade plan without governance and then you can just use CosmAdvisor. So I don't know why they're not using that type of lesson learned and just fucking doing it that way.
Not CosmAdvisor though, right? I think the binary just automatically halts at that height.
I think it injects like a upgrade plan the same as if they had governance.
Oh, okay.
All right.
It's related to the SDK. It's not related to CosmAdvisor.
Yeah, I thought it just halts it. Like it just forces the halt and that's it. It just shuts the node down.
Yeah, it's a function of xgov rather than CosmAdvisor. Like the upgrade, the emission is the same as a scheduled software upgrade, essentially.
Yeah, so we'd put the log and CosmAdvisor would pick it up.
I mean, that would be great if that actually worked.
But my point is that if you were not running CosmAdvisor, it would also halt.
Oh, I think we just hit the halt height. Let me see if my nodes all stopped.
Oh.
Why are they pairing? They should be fucking dead.
I mean, the other thing you can do is just stop the systemd and run it in like screen or tmux with a fucking halt height.
Wait, what the fuck is this shit? Fail to apply block error halt height per configuration height 117950. That's where we are.
Are you on Neutron, Schulte?
Yeah, he's on Neutron.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're experiencing the same pain in real time?
All right. Well, my nodes are, they halted at the height somehow. So do we get 51? Holy shit, we didn't get 51. God damn it. Unbelievable. It actually worked.
You did get the height.
It actually halted on height. All right, let me run the upgrade. Unbelievable. That's amazing.
You saw it here first, folks. Something stopped at the height.
And a halt height actually worked. Is it V421? Is that what it is?
Schulte, did yours stop at the height?
He's got to ask James. He delegates. Discord looking? He delegates his shit. Come on, man. He's a CEO. Right. He doesn't know. I got to check with my people.
Is the Discord looking just like a fucking shit show of yawping? upgraded.
It's amazing.
Not yet. It will be soon, though.
Does everyone think that, like, you know, the fucking foundation is there with their pen and paper writing down the fucking monikers of the people who yawp that they've upgraded? Oh, fucking.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
Rhino's upgraded. Oh, it's a fucking gold star for Rhino. We're going to get out the gold star board
to keep it track.
I am 100% sure that some teams do. Should they? No. Do they? Yes.
So, the teams that do are almost certainly the ones that shouldn't fucking bother, I imagine.
Something like that. Yeah.
That's kind of my.
I can name a couple of networks.
My impression, at least, like when we were running more networks, was the people who are the most jobs worthy, shall we say, were usually the networks that had too much time on their hands because maybe the network wasn't doing as well as they thought it would.
But they still had budget.
They still got a bit of runway left to burn, baby. So let's do it by sitting on Discord because that's work.
So, Rhino or Serp, I've just started load balancing the beacon nodes on ETH, and for some reason I thought that it would have issues, but it seems to work just fine.
You can do that?
Seems like you can.
You can't really change the like the provider though. So like you can't mix Prism and Lighthouse because they have different URLs. So that's super dumb, but you can load balance them.
URIs?
You can't. It's a one-to-one pair.
Different.
It's the same.
It's not.
No. They're not the same.
Oh, sorry. But there's like some of them are the same and some of them are different though, right?
They have small differences.
Yeah, small differences.
Which makes them kind of incompatible.
You can load balance the consensus engine? Is that what you're saying?
Seems that way. Yeah.
I swear to God, like well, they all say,
as long as your entities that are running all have the same identity, only one of them will get hit by the request, right? And then go. And,
yeah.
I don't know why you would. I can't really think of a reason why you would load balance it because all you're doing is putting additional load on the box and
maybe failover.
Apparently, single thread
failover might be a better not necessarily load balance, but maybe failover might be a better.
Yeah, but if you're on the same. Yeah, so you could put two on separate boxes, load balance them, and have like an automatic failover, I suppose, for the consensus part. But
what's the point?
Well, that's also hang on. Let's take a step back. Is that doable for Tendermint? No, it's not because Tendermint has the slashing built in. So the way slashing is implemented in Tendermint means it's not possible in Tendermint, is my understanding.
What's the point of doing that?
What's that?
What's the point of having failover on the CL engine?
Probably none.
Because you're still going to use one execution, so who gives a shit?
Yeah, I don't think
I'm going to undo it because it's scaring me.
All right.
Anyway, SSV continued to function just fine, bouncing between two different consensus clients.
So. I mean, I do remember seeing that on like all of the consensus engine structures around not mixing multiple consensus engines and not having multiple consensus like that CLEL should be a one-to-one pair always.
Yeah, the CLEL is one-to-one, but the maybe I explained that wrong.
I think
actually you're like exposing the beacon, two different beacons to like the one SSV, for example.
Oh, so I'm sorry. So two different CLEL pairs to one SSV, meaning like SSVs. That doesn't make a difference. Yeah. Okay. Cause it doesn't really do anything with the, it's just looking for an endpoint to be able to get chain state. Right. So that's totally cool.
Not sharing like a JWT or anything.
Okay. All right. That makes sense. That's a fucking weird diversion, but yeah. Okay. All right. What's going on? Neutral
quirks anyway.
Do we have a block? Do we get
any live logs here? Or?
We move past it. I was right. 9:50. We got 9:51 through 9:55 a minute ago. I'm guessing 9:55 is not on the new engine. I think hull height failed. Let's see. My nodes are all in the new one. We'll see what the fuck.
Happy days.
For the record, there's now a Discord channel called Validator Chat full of text saying upgraded. It has now happened.
That's funny. All right, let's see what happens.
Thanks to Juno's communication, DAO, 4K a month funding for two comms members. Juno now has a tutorial/demo on how to use Andromeda's platform to mint NFTs for Juno. Illegal rave event being hosted by Highlander.
See, event hosted by Highlander? I thought he disappeared. I thought he was gone.
Wait, my Neutron nodes are seeing 56, 57. Did we make it past this upgrade already? Get the fuck out of here. That's impossible. There's no way.
Maybe the upgrade actually successfully happened and you're seeing new blocks not because you blew past it, but because the professionalism of Neutron validators cannot be underestimated.
I think that comment is 100% true because I'm seeing new blocks on the new binary with no app hashes. That was a halt height upgrade that went
better than an actual Cosmo Visor upgrade.
Yeah, that that's was wild.
That's fucking unbelievable. James saying, congrats, validators. That is insanity. How the hell did that happen?
That is literally unbelievable.
That's the first time that has ever happened that we've ever... I've never seen a Hull-Hide upgrade that actually went through.
That hasn't taken 2 hours plus?
That hasn't taken...
Neutron, no less.
8 hours plus. You can't eat 2 hours.
I mean, maybe the Neutron cohort are just getting like really used to it now.
I mean...
There's been enough training by this point?
The Hull-Hide was 10 minutes ago. Wait, no, that's not true. Hull-Hide was 10 minutes ago. Looks like we had two more blocks, which it did move past, and now 10 minutes or less. Actually, it looks like it started moving 6 minutes ago. That's insanity. We do see some nodes that are having app hashes, not us, but like some valves are talking about it, but that's because they probably missed the Hull-Hide. That's crazy. Wow.
So I'll tell you one thing I have done before with a Hull-Hide upgrade was not use system D and go into screen and start the binary with the Hull-Hide in it, but with the
I'll just quit.
Yeah, but with, and then at the end of that, put the ampersand, and then the start for the system D, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then upgrade the new binary into the current directory of CosmoVisor, so that when the Hull-Hide hits and it exits the current instance, it'll then start up the system D with the new binary without you having to be there.
Well, that's smart. That's a good idea. That's fucking.
You are a maverick.
Fucking, you are crazy, dude.
Blazing trails.
But you still get a change of binary, right? So how would you do that?
Yeah, that's mad.
No, you put it into the CosmoVisor current directory because that's what it's going to start back into.
And put the other one into like in Go Bin or something.
Dude. Oh, well, you just have the other one in Go Bin, yeah.
Yeah. Dude, you're like...
Yeah, but you can also start the binary with the Hull-Hide and put ampersand, and then, Neutron D start after it.
Right.
And after it starts up, then you upgrade the binary in Go Bin.
Yeah.
And then it'll stop and restart again, and then you're upgraded.
That's pretty fucking badass, dude. It's a good idea.
Mm.
That's one of those
things. Come up with all sorts of bullshit when you don't want to get up at 3 a.m.
That's the
answer. It's just really need the adapt, improvise, overcome meme.
This is one of those things that like some PhD 10 years from now will explain to the fray, and they'll be like, oh, fuck, yeah. Null mentioned this back in 2024. He's a fucking genius.
As if any of this shit's gonna be relevant in 10 years time. It's already scarcely relevant. People are like, Cosmos, amazing. Wasn't that a thing a few years ago?
I tell you what, I have in the last couple of years, I have increasingly been forced to be more of a bash monkey. So do enjoy a bit of bash these days. Jake says, what do people think about the state of Cosmosm these days? Well, I mean, it's the source of a lot of fun.
I mean, there has been some issues.
I think if you are a white hat hacker, it can be quite lucrative, the current state of Cosmosm in like bug bashing, right?
What's the bug bashing? What's the dollars associated there right now?
Depends on the network, but if there's networks that if you discover a critical vulnerability in their stack and Cosmosm is part of the stack, then you can make bank on like the bug bounty.
Shit, maybe I should be doing that.
You should. There was a dude for say the other day took home a cool fucking couple of million for a bug.
Oof, in the wrong game. In whatever game I'm currently in, I don't even know what game I'm playing anymore.
A couple million,
whatever game. Yeah,
I can't remember the exact amount, I'm confused. Pretty sure it was like upwards of a million.
Dude, there's literally like 1 billion Wawa for you if you want to be able to do this. If you could make it happen. Like,
I got 1 billion Wawa for you right here, buddy.
I think
has the Wawa team successfully whittled down the fucking treasury to nothing yet, or
burn it all?
It must be nearly zero. You'd have thought.
Going to ICS at a chain near you.
Oh, that'd be great.
They're talking about it. It already came up, right?
What if Wawa just...
I thought I saw Zdeck talking about it. It'd be amazing.
They're trying to remarket that a little bit. Like, hey, we're the original meme coin and all that. Yeah.
Okay. They are the original Cosmos meme.
Agreed.
They should probably just become their own hub and do ICS off of Wawa.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
Amazing.
Relaunch Cerberus as an ICS chain from Wawa.
I think so.
Resurrect Cerberus for ICS.
I think Jappy's plan is a much better meme chain. The you moron thing. That's great.
You moron.
Yeah, you have a moron.
That's pretty good.
You have a moron. You have a token where the ticker's moron, and then it's denominated as you morons, and then you're surprised when it rug pulls you.
Just fucking perfect.
That's OG.
The Gon chat has not been so active in the last like 6 months as what it was with that discussion about the fucking moron chain.
Yeah, well, it's because the actual reason is because a lot of the Gon chat are back to their day jobs. The group chat, look, you know, like we in the pre-show we were I was talking about that is currently what's happening in my life. So it's just like, yeah, you know, there's a lot of what are we doing in the Cosmos energy, and it's not particularly surprising that. Like, it's because it's also not every, it's also just like in general, the validator business, we've talked about this before at length, various different angles, is becoming kind of what you would expect now, right? Which is a margins game. It's like a big volume margins game. And the mom and pop garage band validators, which is what to varying extents we all were when we started companies working in the space, are no longer viable in the same way, right? And we've gone different routes. Some of us have expanded and become very big, and some of us have backed away from it, you know. And I think that's just true in the group chat in general. When you look at folks have taken different decisions on the direction they want to go as validator teams, I guess, right? A lot of people keep it as a hobby, right, as well, or an expensive hobby potentially.
I think if you're like, if you're a hobbyist and running and you're interested in like maybe one or two networks, I think that's probably like fine, but you're not a hobbyist running fucking 40 networks. Like, you're pretty committed at that point.
Sure. But like, there's the only person I can think of who's like a hobbyist in spirit, but running that many networks is probably like Jappy.
He doesn't run that many networks though, right?
They're mostly running about 12, I think, right?
Oh, I don't even know. I thought it was like 10. Yeah. Or five or six or something like that. But agreed. Like, but hobbyist is a weird thing, because I think people enter this like it's a 24/7 job, right? Like, it's work. Even though, like, you know, Null runs all the shit at Contabo and stuff like that, like, and VPS is like, there's still, even though his archive,
I don't have shit at Contabo anymore,
even though his archive nodes are running on Raspberry Pis and like a stack of spinner drives, hey man, under his desk,
can take NVMEs these days.
Even so. it's still a lot of work, that's for sure.
I'm just waiting to be rugged here. Like, are you just not pressing the button, the fray? Or
are you over time? I still can't believe this fucking network's moving.